Welcome back to the program. Every so often, there is a writer whose versatility astounds us all, and whose work and experience is on display for all of us to see. Such is the case with Anne Rice. She's written about vampires, about witches, about angels, and about religion. Now she turns her attention to the subject of werewolves, and makes us pay very special attention to aspects that have been left out by others in writing about the genre. Anne Rice is the author of 31 previous books, most recently of Love and Evil and Angel Time. It is my pleasure to welcome her back to this program to talk about her newest work, The Wolf Gift. Anne Rice, thanks so much for joining us.
Delighted. Absolutely delighted.
Great to have you back. We've spent a lot of time talking about vampires. We spent, I think, the last time you were on talking about religion and faith. How did we come to werewolves?
Good question. Well, you know, I'd never written about werewolves, and I don't know. I wasn't going to go in that direction, but people have suggested it over the years many times. And my sister, Alice Borchardt, published a number of successful novels about werewolves. And I lost Alice in 2007. And her books still sell on Amazon. She has quite a following, and in other places. But anyway, for various reasons, I didn't consider it until this friend, Jeff Easton, the producer of the TV show White Collar, suggested in an email. He said that he'd just seen a documentary on werewolves and werewolf fiction, and he said, if you ever tackle it, you know, I will buy the book, buckets of hardcovers. And for some reason, that struck a note, and I started to think, well, what would I do with this? And suddenly, this novel, this whole vision of this little whole world started to come into being for me. And within about a month, I was writing The Wolf Gift.
In his comments to you and in you plunging into this, clearly there is something in the culture, in the zeitgeist of the moment, that drives us towards an interest in this. What do you think that's about?
You know, I don't know, but you're right. I mean, True Blood has vampires and werewolves. The Twilight movies have vampires and werewolves. People are really expressing themselves through supernatural fiction and supernatural romance right now. And I really don't know what drives this. I've been asked many times since I wrote Interview with the Vampire in 1976, what do I think about all this popularity of vampires? All I know is that people are no longer prejudiced against the supernatural when it comes to fiction. You know, it's almost become part of the mainstream now.
Right. And obviously 76 was a while ago, and yet it is still popular. So it's clearly not something just of the moment or a passing fancy that fits in with a particular time. It's an ongoing kind of powerful interest.
Well, that's really what's happened now. I mean, there were always some books about vampires on the fantasy shelves or the gothic shelves, whatever. But now, like I said, it's part of the mainstream. You have all kinds of writers writing about this. And look at TV, the shows like Supernatural and Being Human and True Blood and The Vampire Diaries. I mean, I can't explain it except that it's what people want right now. And they're enjoying it. And they're doing a lot of different imaginative things with vampires and werewolves.
The other thing that's fascinating about it is that it is very cross-generational, which is hard to find these days.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, I have a very active Facebook page with about 570,000 people, and it's amazing. They're people of all ages. They're very young people who have just turned on to my writing. They're people who say they've been reading me for 30 years, you know? So it is cross-generational, and I've noticed that at my signings, that people will come with their mothers, with their fathers, or with their children, you know. And it's wonderful. It's so rewarding to a writer to see that somebody cares enough about a book you wrote to recommend it to their own daughter or son. Mm-hmm. It's kind of thrilling, really.
Talk about what you had to think about in the direction you wanted to go with respect to werewolves and bringing something unique to that vision.
Well, I had never liked the idea that the werewolf loses his mind and memory and just goes wild. The human being changes. He goes wild as a beast man. He rips somebody apart. Then he wakes up with no recollection. That had never interested me. I wanted to explore the idea that my hero, Reuben, would remember everything, that he would be himself when this transformation happened. He wouldn't black out. He not only would he experience it all, but his personality would be recording what's happening to him. And that's kind of the direction I went. Just as I have with vampires, we get it from Ruben's point of view, what it's like when he's alone in his room and the first transformation comes over him and he goes out into the night and he's really a man-wolf, like Lon Chaney in the old movies. You know, he walks upright. He doesn't really become a four-footed animal. He's a wolf man, and he's able to move over the rooftops, and he's able to hear people in need. He's able to respond to calls of people in distress. And he's able to go back after this is all over and actually photograph himself with his iPhone, you know, and then he passes out. And when he wakes up, he fully expects that those pictures on his iPhone are going to show that he imagined the whole thing, but they don't. They show the man-wolf that he became. He's actually able to look at those pictures and ponder this. And to me, that's what's so exciting, is to get into a character and deepen that character and have that character's response to the supernatural.
It's interesting that you mention, you know, the old Lon Chaney films, because one of the things about those old films and one of the things that you seem to bring to this werewolf story is moving it more towards character, because it's less about the special effects.
Oh, absolutely. You're so right. You're so right. I mean, with me, with my work, it's all about character. It's more about that than anything else. It's about how do I feel now that I'm a vampire? How do I feel now that I'm a man-wolf? What do I do with this power? And really, movies based on these works don't have to have enormous CGI budgets, you know, they really don't.
The other aspect of it is, and this is part of the appeal, I suppose, to adolescence, as it is, I guess, in a broader sense, that there is this great sense of these characters being outsiders, of being the proverbial stranger in a strange land.
Oh, yeah, and I think you're absolutely right that we first feel that in adolescence, but I think all people, to some extent, feel that. I think that's the real pull of supernatural fiction for adults and teenagers, is that we all have a part of us that feels like an outsider, like a monster sometimes, a dark and secret place within us where we entertain thoughts that maybe we can't share with others. And that is the appeal. You know, kids write to me all the time. They identify with the vampires. They really do. They feel that way themselves, like they've undergone some horrible transformation. Of course, they haven't. They're just becoming adults. You know, they're getting hormones. They're experiencing the awakening of sexuality. It's all part of life. But I think supernatural fiction has always been intense for people because it's really about us.
And for the adults, it's like the old Groucho Marx line through Woody Allen, I don't want to belong to any club that would have me as a member.
Right. It's all too true.
Talk a little bit about the comparisons between what you've done with the werewolves here and where you took vampires.
Well, with the vampires, you know, ended up writing 12 books, and it was really the exploration of how they use their powers and how they use time when they become immortal. How did they see the 20th century and the 21st and so forth? But again, it's the character, the hero. I really love the idea of the hero, the doomed hero that's fighting with something like the vampiric need to drink blood, the wolf, man-wolf ability to become as powerful as a beast, and yet that person struggling to retain his humanity, his conscience, his personality, his capacity to love. And that, I did the same really in this book with Reuben in The Wolf Gift as I did in The Vampire Chronicles in exploring that.
Talk about this notion of heroes and the importance of them, you know, historically in literature and how they've become, to some extent, forgotten in so many ways.
Well, I think our mind needs heroes. I really do. And the earliest literature we have always involved heroes. And I think it's because we long for heroes, we long to be heroes ourselves, and we long to believe that there are heroes, that there are good, super good people in this world who go way beyond what's expected of them and do heroic acts. And I think you're right, it was forgotten, especially for a long time in literature in America, as we got into realism, we got away from heroes. But the thing is, people want heroes. And so fantasy and supernatural fiction and even historical fiction kept developing right alongside of the literature that was more realistic. And now it's booming. I mean, now you have as much fantasy and sci-fi and historical fiction on the bestseller lists of this country as you have realistic fiction, because people want, the mind longs for those heroes. The soul longs for them. It's more fun in some ways, and maybe even more instructive, to read a good book about a hero than it is perhaps to read realistic fiction, which is often cynical and,
right,
and a little despairing.
And that's, I suppose, why we see these heroes in fantasy fiction, because it's safer. You can be less ironic and less cynical.
Exactly. It's an escape from that. It's an escape. I mean, it's and look at the spy novel and the detective novel. I mean, these are filled with heroes, super people who accomplish great things. And I think we're all, you know, in our heart and souls longing to be like that. We're longing to do that. We would love it if somebody tapped us on the shoulder and said, we need you at the CIA right now, and we're going to inject you with a drug that's going to make you invulnerable, you know.
We've gone from James Bond to werewolves, I guess,
exactly.
In search of our heroes.
Exactly. Well, it's true. It's true. And, again, that has wide appeal right now, the werewolf hero and the vampire hero.
Talk a little bit about that and your views of some of the other work that's out there taking advantage of this.
Well, I love the new things that people are doing with the vampire myth. You know, I really do. I think Charlaine Harris, with her Sookie Stackhouse novels, mm-hmm, and the True Blood show, is just wonderfully clever. I love Charlaine. I think she's taken the vampires into a whole new world that I never thought of, you know, putting them in the small town environment and having them come out of the closet in America as vampires. I mean, I just never thought of that sort of thing. And it's wonderfully fun. And, of course, Twilight and the Vampire Diaries have done this genius thing of putting vampires in high school. So they appeal tremendously to the high school reader. You know, the idea that the guy next to you in biology class could really be a 100-year-old vampire who looks like the cutest kid in school, you know. I thought that was very clever, too. And I think the basic concept of the vampire is so rich that we're going to see more and more different explorations of the myth. No doubt. In fact, we are. There are many more out there.
It's interesting that there was a time, and maybe it's still true, but certainly a little bit different, when a lot of these same ideas and same notions were part of science fiction. Maybe they were a little more paranoid in their basis, but they came out of the science fiction world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think science fiction was very seminal with all of this. I remember back in the 50s when science fiction started to be really big, and it was quite amazing. I mean, we were reading books by Robert Heinlein and getting into it, and the whole idea of speculative fiction, that you could create a speculative world in your short story. You could create a planet with your own rules where things happen the way you want it, and then you could tell your story of good and evil or suffering and pain or whatever in that environment. That was powerful, and that passed into the mainstream in American fiction, and it opened up everything for all the writers. I think you're very right about that.
It's interesting when one looks back at Star Wars, what it tried to do, and maybe part of its power and appeal was that it tapped both veins. It tapped this sense of heroism that we're talking about, but it also maintained that little bit of ironic edge at the same time.
Yes, I think you're right about that. I think it did. And certainly it was a revelation. I mean, I'll never forget that the first time I saw Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It was at a book convention. It was a special screening. And we had never seen anything like it. It was so much fun. It was like being a kid again. And it was quite wonderful to launch that with those huge production values and see that just become, you know, the hottest movie in town. And, of course, Star Trek was absolutely terrific. I mean, the TV show. I mean, I remember seeing the very first season of Star Trek and just being amazed, being so happy that we had something like that now on TV. It was, and at the same time, Dark Shadows premiered right around that same time.
Is The Wolf Gift the first in what will be a series of werewolf stories?
I think so. I really, the characters are still very much alive in my mind, and Reuben lives in this wonderful house, Nideck Point, and I keep seeing the house, and the house is sort of a tribute to all the houses I've lived in, And I keep wanting to go back to Nideck Point and get with Reuben again and keep writing about what's happening with him.
One of the things that we haven't talked about is that these stories are set here in the Bay Area, in the San Francisco Bay Area and the Mendocino Coast.
Right. Well, I lived up there for 30
right.
years, and I love the area. I totally love it. And I remember vividly so many things. You know, sometimes you have to be away a little bit from a landscape to write about it. You have to be removed to really see it vividly. And it's great fun for me to be back writing about the Bay Area, the wind, the cold, chill ocean wind in Mendocino County, and the gorgeous redwood trees of Muir Woods and Mill Valley, and of course San Francisco, which is just one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
Anne Rice, her new novel is The Wolf Gift. Anne, I thank you so much, as always, for spending time with us.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We'll take a break. I'll be right back.